I'm Daniel Welsh and I'm here with Rachel McGraw and Ash Percival. This week on the podcast, we're talking women in music, disastrous pop star film careers, and reminiscing about some of our favourite past boy band stars. Before we get into that though, I want to talk about Big Brother. Now, I know what you're thinking, the last time Big Brother was relevant, Gordon Brown was Prime Minister, a pint cost half the price it is now, and nobody in the country knew who Katie Hopkins was. But it seems like this time around the show could actually be worth a watch. So, Channel 5 has revealed new details about the new series, and that includes the theme and the newly designed eye. So I don't know if you've seen the new Big Brother eye.
Yeah, it's headache-inducing.
It's, I don't want to say it looks Brexity, but also it doesn't not look Brexity. So it's like, just for people listening, it's like it's the usual eye shape and it's shaped like the Union Jack and it's sort of scattered with like elements of British culture.
It's definitely very Brexit.
It's a little bit Brexity, but it's, you know, it's different aspects. So it's got like the gates of Buckingham Palace and then it's got a pro-immigration protest and tea, obviously.
And a queue.
And a queue. Yeah, all that good shit that, you know, makes Britain great. As well as the Union Jack / Brexit EI, they've also said that this time around they're going back to their social experiment roots and they're going to showcase, let me see what it says. They're going to showcase a culture clash of modern Britain. They've said, at a time of political upheaval and tough questions about unity, Big Brother brings you an alternative look at Britain. So this has got potential to be quite interesting viewing, but knowing what Channel 5 have done with Big Brother in the past, it could also be a car crash. So I want to know what you think.
Well, I'm kind of like, I'm trying to reserve judgment because the premise of the series, actually, as a long-term Big Brother fan, it sounds reassuring and it's kind of what I've wanted the show to do for a really long time. I'm kind of sick of the Geordie Shore wannabes and the models, and I'm so sick of that kind of Big Brother. So I feel going back to this like idea of it's all different types of people from different walks of life, different ages, I think is a really good idea. As to whether I think that Channel 5 will pull it off, remains to be seen for me on that one. They kind of tend to go for quite gimmicky kind of angles on each series, so I don't really know if we're going to see kind of Big Brother in its truest form like it was back in the day.
I think if you have too much like intellectual discussion around it and you have too much like, you know, you've just said getting rid of the models and the wannabes and all of that, but they are a part of our culture as well. Those people have got just as much right to be on Big Brother as anybody else.
You don't need a whole house of them.
Yeah, absolutely not, but I think getting rid of them completely negates the point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where are we all from? We're from like Essex and Newcastle and Bristol. If you go out in Essex and Newcastle and Bristol, you're gonna see those wannabe models.
Yeah.
Those people that
you've not been out in Bristol, have you?
I put emphasis on the wannabe. But like, you know what I mean? Those people, they are as if what you want to show is a culture clash, then just having people discussing political issues, I could watch Newsnight for that. I don't need to watch Big Brother.
No, I don't even think it's that, though. I don't think it's like I want to sit around and watch what they think about Brexit or Trump or whatever. But it's just more sort of having a mixture from different
Real
walks
people,
of life and
it?
People that you would meet in the street or like see in a coffee shop or like, I don't know, just real people.
I feel quite stressed out about it, I think.
Why
I think
you feel it's just right. I'm intrigued
like,
to hear what you're
I think it's about. A really good idea, and I think like I've always kind of dipped in and out of Big Brother over the years. I'm not like a massive Big Brother fan, and I think the idea that they're making it a proper social experiment does make me think, oh, this series could be worth watching. But just knowing the way that Big Brother has gone in the past, I just feel very stressed by the fact there'll probably be like an entry VT from like I don't know, like a religious woman in her 30s who might have like a Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist background, and she's going to go into the house and meet everybody, and then she will be immediately followed by a very staunch UKIP supporting anti-immigration person.
Yeah.
And I feel this situation is very likely to unfold, and quite frankly, I just worry that they're going to get people from very different extremes that are obviously going to clash
it's
in gonna a
be
not
like
very
wife
nice
swap
way.
Back in the day, right?
Yeah, and I just think that won't, like, I want to see people from different backgrounds. Like, that is Britain, that is what it is. But also people who are open to learning and
that's it.
Developing their views.
If it's going to be, because, you know, I, not that I want these conflicts to happen, but these are discussions that are happening every single day across Britain. People are talking about, you know, religious extremism versus tolerance of other people and, you know, class divides and things like that and, you know, political opinions conflicting with each other and things like that. These are real conversations. And so if you want to see real people, then I think that it would be great to have those conversations put on the screen. But it's when it goes from being a conversation and a polarized discussion into just turning into a load of people screaming at each other, calling each other homophobes, calling each other racist terms. That's when I don't want to see that.
No.
I'd happily watch two people argue their points of view in a house, you know, a bit stressed out because they haven't seen daylight in 3 days. That, to me, that does sound entertaining, yeah. Especially if there's a resolution at the end. I think about, like, remember Skins? Remember, like, Maxi and Anwar from Skins?
Yeah.
And they were, like, they came from completely different backgrounds and they ended up being, like, best mates. I would love to see something like that on Big Brother. And I feel like that back in the day is what it used to be about. I remember Big Brother 5, the first two that went in, it was Marco was the first one, former Samaritan, really camp, law student. And then the next one in was Ahmed, devout Muslim, outward, I think he was an outward homophobe. He said he didn't agree with gay marriage, blah, 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 blah. Those were the first two in. So putting people in with these extreme backgrounds, it's not a new thing. And, you know, that was one of the best series ever. Although, do we want a repeat of all of those rows? That's another matter.
Well, because I've seen more of Celebrity Big Brother than I have of the normal one. And I just think about people like, do you remember when they put that Winston McKenzie in and he had to be immediately pulled out because... Wasn't he literally, he was outwardly homophobic in his VT?
Well, he was in his VT.
Yeah, and then we had Ken Morley, who also eventually was pulled out because at first he was like this older, slightly sexist man, and then it was like, oh, actually, he shouldn't be in there. And I just worry they're going to get people like
that. That's the thing, isn't it? Because, again, people in their Big Brother audition tapes, they don't give you the whole story. They're not a whole 100%.
They're playing a part of themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, if you're... You know, let's say you're a massive misogynist. I'll try and put myself in that position. If I was going to audition for Big Brother, I'd maybe give like a little hint of that, a little bit of Jack the Lad, a little bit of, oh, you know, whatever, get in the kitchen and make me a sandwich. That's sort of what we kind of deem as acceptable sexism. Some people do. All the while, you're actually harboring these deeply anti-women feelings that are going to come out later down the line, and that is a scary thought of that being on television, especially because when we look at people who've done well on Celebrity Big Brother, especially, you've got Jim McDonald, you've got Katie
Jim McDonald. Is it Jim McDonald?
Oh my God, what's he called? Not Jim McDonald. I wish he would go on Big Brother.
Jim Davidson.
Although Jim McDonald for Celebrity Big Brother.
Oh my God.
Let's derail that conversation.
Let's make that happen.
Yeah, put that in the universe. Who was it? Jim Davidson won. Katie Hopkins came second.
Stephen Bear, Charlotte Crosby.
I mean, Charlotte Crosby's not a bad lass. You know, she's not bad in the way that those other three people are. Like, I wouldn't put them in the same bracket.
No.
Not to say that those people are bad or anything.
They're
obviously
just
impartiality.
They're people who were perhaps not ready to learn and develop themselves as people. It's a diplomatic way of putting
it. My concern is that they will sort of play it like quite sort of on a level playing field, as I think they should, sort of harking back to the roots. But then knowing what Channel 5 are like with Big Brother, they just get bored and forget what they're doing halfway through the series and go, oh, do you know what? This isn't working. So let's like just tear everything up. So my concern is they'll have all these people in there with extreme views and then they'll start playing with their heads and start doing like second rooms, new housemates going in. Like, and that's what's going to like derail it and actually fuck up the social experiment side of things.
So you're saying even if it gets off to a shaky start, just leave it.
Just leave it. Just let it play out. Just lock them in the house. Stop it with all the twists. People know there's always going to be a second house. So don't bother with all that shit. Just leave them, have the normal nominations process and sit back and watch it unfold.
Well, it's back next month, so we can look forward to that on Channel 5 and see how well this theme is handled. I want to talk to you about Emily Evers of Glastonbury fame because she's given some really interesting quotes this week about female representation at festivals. So she's, you know, every single year, the festival lineups for various different events are announced and every single year we have the same conversation. Where are all the women? Why is it all male headliners? And it feels like, you know, it's slowly getting better, but it is a very slow process. So she said that she's determined to address this imbalance and she wants to, you know, put as many women at the forefront as possible and, you know, right that wrong, basically. But what I want to know is this a problem with music festivals or the way women are viewed in the music industry in general? What do we reckon?
I think it's really, really good that Emily Eavis is kind of, you know, she's doing her best to change this. And she's kind of doing it from the top down. You know, Glastonbury is the biggest festival that there is. You can't get much higher than that. But I think the changes need to happen so much earlier on. It's not her fault when she looks at who can I have as a headliner? It's not her problem if the best offer is Ed Sheeran. Like, for God's sake. Like, we need to do better for Emily. I think the problem goes a lot deeper than that. Like, and we need to look at why there are no female acts getting to that stage of their career, perhaps.
So in your opinion, why do you think that is?
I just think there's multiple reasons why. Like, I feel like I could go on for about 6 hours on this. There's just so many things that hold women back in the music industry. One of the things I think about quite a lot is, you know, Lauren Mabry from Churches. Have you seen her? Do you know who Churches are?
Yeah, vaguely.
There's loads of videos on YouTube, basically. So their Churches are a really big band. I saw them last year at Latitude on like a really high slot. They're like pretty well established. And if you go on YouTube and look at videos of them performing, there's so many of the things that get shouted at her while she's on stage. And it'll just be men being like, oh, I love you. Oh, Lauren, marry me. Oh, Lauren, I want your babies. And every time she is like, fucking, she is brilliant. she's brilliant. And she'll shout them down and she'll be like, no, like, why? And I just think that's like one tiny example of like the sort of stuff women have to face.
So again, that's not aggressively like sexual stuff, it's just annoying stuff that a man wouldn't have to put up with.
Yeah, but it's like there's so many, so you're like, oh well, why would that stop you from getting anywhere? Like, that's only one tiny thing. But it's just, I feel that there are so many tiny things,
but
like
it's constant
that
as well, like you
yeah
said.
It's
and
endless,
it's, you know, it's a distraction.
Yeah, and you just, I can see why you just have so many battles to fight. I can see that you would give up.
My
on
thing
some
is
of them.
We just, it feels like we have this opinion about women, like in pop music especially, that they're not taken seriously.
Yeah.
And I think all you have to do with that is compare Gary Barlow and Jerry Halliwell, who both wrote, you know, Jerry Halliwell wrote all the Spice Girls music. Gary Barlow wrote all the, what's his band? See,
take,
I mean,
take
come
that.
On, what is that band? Take that. And yet he, you know, he's like, oh, songwriter of the year. But Jerry Halliwell is just a joke. She had such cultural impact. You know, she was the front woman, essentially, of one of the most important pop groups of the 90s. And now we just look at her like, oh, it's Jerry. What's she doing now? Oh, it's silly old Jerry. Like,
in fairness, know. Have you seen that? Is it called Half of Me?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, but, you know...
Look, Ed Sheeran is the biggest male pop star. How is it that a man that mediocre can headline Glastonbury and someone like Florence Welch only gets it by default because a man dropped
but
her out?
But I think, like, so I think a lot of it comes from... Glastonbury tries to stick to its roots in terms of like being a sort of a rock alternative festival. And the reality is there's not a lot of women sort of in big, I can't think of the word, like big...
just like the kind of headline level bands.
Yeah, there isn't. Like,
but there should be.
And there totally should be. But that's kind of like Glastonbury's limitation. Like, yes, they had Beyonce 1 year, but how many pop acts have they had on the stage since? Adele? And that's maybe it? Like, I feel that they are limiting themselves. They're saying, we want to put more women on the stage. We want to put more women on the stage. But actually, they only really want to put kind of rock alternative acts
on. Well, I thought that's what interesting, like what Emily Eavis said today, like the bit I did find interesting was that she said, we're having to look outside of the genres we would normally look at.
Yeah.
Have you got it?
I've got it here. What she says is, she said exactly what you just said. Sometimes it means book an act who are slightly more out of genre than they're comfortable with.
And I think that's a good thing.
I think that's a good thing.
Because Glastonbury, like, I think we've discussed on this podcast before, like, the calibre of Glastonbury headlines. It just always seems it's like it's Coldplay or it's Muse or, like, Ed Sheeran this year. Like, you can kind of, like, predict them now. So I think it would be good for them to, like, mix it up and just, you know, throw a total curveball 1 year and just have someone, like, I don't know, this is probably a bad example and you're going to shout me down, but someone like Lady Gaga or, like, someone who's
a bad
example.
She's
I think
just
that's
done
good.
The Super Bowl.
Well, like, even, like, Taylor Swift, like... I have mixed feelings about Taylor Swift on the whole, but as a musician,
that's a whole separate podcast.
But her albums were really great. When she did the 1989 tour, you know, Rihanna,
Hyde Park, Taylor Swift sold out Hyde Park. It was incredible.
The same day that Kanye headlined Glastonbury, I had to choose between two of my faves at the time.
You didn't get the right choice.
Only one of them remains my fave. I won't say which one. Rihanna, though, like, do you think it's that thing? Maybe Yeah, if like,
Rihanna would
just
have to be on form though.
She would.
But she's Rihanna on
can be
form.
Well, no, she can be very hit and miss.
At V Festival, she was absolutely amazing.
I saw her at Big Weekend. And
I don't think Rihanna has done a miss in a long time. Like, I think you're talking, I think the Rihanna you're talking about is harking back to a few years ago. I think if you look at Rihanna's recent performances, did she do Coachella?
No, I saw her at V Festival.
Well, then,
and
that'd
you
be what it is.
The
I'm making up performances that she's done. That's why I think she's so good, because it happened in my head.
She actually has headlined Glastonbury already.
No, but she did the Brit Awards, she did V Festival. Yeah. And, you know, nobody's complaining about this. I think Rihanna would be an amazing headliner for Glastonbury personally.
She's got so many songs that so many people love.
She could do her own festival, essentially, because her back catalogue is huge.
I wanted her to headline it last year. I thought it was going to happen for a really long time. Do you remember when I was like,
yeah,
totally
well, there were gaps
convinced
in the tour dates, weren't there?
There was the perfect gap and it didn't happen. And I have many conspiracy theories as to why.
All right, well, we'll save those conspiracy theories for another podcast, because we have to move on. And I want to talk about a slightly more lighthearted topic. This week, Patti LuPone, goddess among Broadway legends, made headlines when she called Madonna a movie killer and branded her Golden Globe winning performance in Evita, and I quote, a piece of shit. So this was in Watch What Happens Live. Patti LuPone obviously originated the role of Eva Perón, which Madonna then played in the film. And it seems she's not a fan, even though Madonna did actually do a really good job and she did get lots of award nominations and it's still fantastic 20 years later.
Are you a Madonna fan, Daniel?
In my unbiased opinion, obviously. But what I want to ask is about is, are pop stars in general, en général, given too rough a ride when it comes to their film careers?
I kind of feel like when I see, it's kind of like stunt casting, and I kind of don't agree with it. And I see this like in other areas of the entertainment industry, like when celebrities get made radio presenters, for example. I just kind of think there's so many other people out there that are learning that craft.
You're not bitter, are you?
Not at all.
Just add George Shelley next time, Ash. You won't say it, but I will.
It just kind of annoys me because there's so many people waiting in the wings to have those jobs and have spent years sort of learning those skills, perfecting their talent. And a celebrity will just come in and just knock them to one side and assume that job.
So you reckon we should be looking at these pop stars' performances with a fine tooth comb and saying, you know, you've got this job through nepotism.
Yeah, through merit. Give them the job. If they're a great actor, give it to them. But if they're just a name, I just know, like, it's just a stunt and it's just PR.
See, I go for it. What do you reckon?
I disagree for all the wrong reasons. So one of my favourite films of all time, which is an awful, awful film,
is it on your basic DVD shelf?
No, I don't have it on DVD. It went straight to DVD, so I don't know why I haven't bought it. It's a little-known film called Obsession. So I went through this phase where I would just search for Idris Elba on Netflix and watch anything that came up. Don't judge me. And it's been taken off since, but there's a film called Obsession, and it is Idris Elba and Beyonce.
Oh, wow. And it feels like the modern Fatal Attraction, isn't it?
I don't know what it's supposed to be. It is hands down the worst film one of the worst films I've ever seen. It's awful, but then it's quite brilliant.
Can you give me a little taste of
it? I don't know, it's like there's them in this house, and then they just kind of like, they're really in love, and then it's supposed to take like this dark twist, but I'm not really sure what it was. I just spent the whole time feeling quite confused. But anyway, she couldn't act in that. And when we said that we were going to talk about this, that was just my first thought, was so Beyonce in Obsession.
Beyonce, you reckon, can't act in Obsession?
No, but then
is
obviously
it Obsession?
Obsessed, it's one of the two.
Okay.
But
that
then
said, she was great in Austin Powers.
Dream Girls.
But I mean, Dream Girls, I don't know if this is true or not, but it's an urban legend, so, you know, hopefully this is not going to get me in any trouble. But I heard that Beyonce has this gym in her house with a treadmill, and she runs towards a picture of an Oscar. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that is an urban legend that I heard through the grapevine. And I think she thought she was going to get it for Dream Girls. She wasn't even nominated in the end, and Jennifer Hudson won, which I'm sure was
bit of hell.
Do you know what though? Every day she gets up and she's Beyonce. Like
exactly.
Every single day she gets up and every single day she's Beyonce. So she must be over it by now, I would imagine. I would think, in answer to the original question that we posed, I do think that pop stars are sometimes given a bit of a rough ride. And I think Madonna is an example of that. So Madonna has been in so many shit films. Like, there's no two ways about it. Loads of the films she's in are absolute garbage. But a couple are okay. And I think she's just generally regarded as being a really terrible actress. But if you watch Evita, has anybody in this room seen Evita?
No.
Not in a really long time.
Right. Evita is absolutely marvellous. Like, in general, it's a great film. Like, the soundtrack's great. All the actors are great. So many costumes. So many fabulous hats and wigs. It's like a film tailor-made for me. Political unrest.
Oh, my God.
It's got it all. Honestly. And Madonna... She should have got more recognition for that film. And I think that it's a shame. And I think, again, it's because of who she is and she has this reputation of being a shit actress. People just want it to be bad.
Well, like, the other one I always think of as well, which is coming up, is Harry Styles in Dunkirk. Now, he's been cast in a Christopher Nolan film. Christopher Nolan does not mess about.
No, he does not.
If you're not good enough, you're not getting that part. But it's kind of the same with him. Like, he's going to face more scrutiny. Like, there's been no kind of confirmation of how big his role even is. But you just know all eyes are going to be on him. Even if it's a tiny little bit part, every single review is going to mention that scene. And he is going to face, like, extra scrutiny because of who he is.
Do you know what, though? But I think that's deserving. I do think that he's going to be under less scrutiny than a woman would be.
Yeah, 100%.
I think if one of Little Mix were to be in a Christopher Nolan film, mm-hmm. well, first of all, there'd be all of the accusations of how she got the part in the first place. Then it would be whatever. But because it's Harry Styles, it's like, oh, you know, well done him. He's obviously got acting in his blood. We have to move on. But what I want to say quickly is that I had Obsessed on my Netflix list for a really long time, and then it got taken off and I still haven't seen it. So if that's not a lesson in seizing the day, I don't know what is. So everyone... do whatever you need to do. Tell whoever it is that you love them, because one day it'll be taken off your Netflix list. We like to end on a quiz in these parts. And speaking of Harry Styles, his solo album is officially out, the imaginatively titled Harry Styles. Obviously, we all know, as a former boy band star, past boy band stars' solo careers have been quite hit and miss. So inspired by this, I want to throw some former boy band stars at you in a game of higher or lower. And I want you to tell me whether their debut solo album did better or worse than the person before them. Okay, so I'm going to kick off with Nick Jonas. His, again, imaginatively titled debut album, Nick Jonas, charted at number 16. Well, actually...
can I just clarify? Is it UK we're on about? UK
charts. UK charts.
Right, okay.
Oh, I love when Ash gets T's and C's.
I know.
I'll be like Claudia and I'll start having an announcement before I do the T's and C's in future.
I don't know what that's a reference to.
It's in Strictly, Daniel.
Oh, okay. I must have been out with my friends then.
You don't have any friends.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah. Or out alone. So yeah, Nick Jonas's debut, well, it's not actually his debut. His debut was Nicholas Jonas, which was a collection of Christian songs, but we'll disregard
these
that.
These are all lessons to me.
Yeah.
And I interviewed him.
Oh, I'm full of Jonas Brother trivia. Because of my friend who loves the Jonas Brothers. His debut album got to number 16 in the charts. Ash, you weren't here last week, so we're coming to you first. Brian McFadden's Irish Son, did it do higher or lower?
I seem to remember that the first single he had actually did quite well. So going off that, I'm going to say higher.
I'm afraid that is incorrect.
Really?
Brian McFadden's Irish Son got to 24 in the charts.
Oh, wow, okay.
He did get a number one single, though, so fair play to you, Brian.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, people have lost interest really quickly in that one. Do you remember? Rachel, Mark Owen, formerly, well, actually still have Take That, Green Man, did it do higher or lower than 24?
I'm not entirely sure that I know which one Mark Owen is.
He's the little one.
He's the little one. The thing is, there's the Gary and then there's the fit one, which is one of the ones that isn't Mark Owen.
Yeah. Well,
that makes Mark Owen the other one by default.
He's the other one, isn't he? I'm just going to say he did worse than that.
That is correct.
Yeah.
So he got to number 33 with his debut album, Green Man.
I remember the lead single was 4 Minute Warning.
Oh, no, this is way before that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, this is back in the day. That I had 4 Minute Warning as a CD single after he came out at the CBB house, but that's a story for another day. Ash, coming back to you. Abstract Theory, the debut album from ABS, from Five.
Oh my God.
Abstract Theory.
Oh,
it's
I
a
like
pod.
It.
Did that do better or worse than 33?
Can I just say, when I was younger, I always used to think he was called ABS.
Not just, to be confused with IBS or RBS.
Why did you think that?
I don't know. Whenever I just used to read his name, I always used to read it as ABS.
Does anyone remember his like debut music video where he had this like...
not in
it was
slightest.
A sleeveless shirt and it was open. And we'll just leave it at that.
Was that your sexual awakening, Daniel?
Yeah, actually, pull it off. Cancel it. It's done. Happy memories.
I'm going to... what was the last one? 36?
33.
33.
Better or worse than 33.
I'm going to say lower.
I'm afraid, Ash, you're incorrect once again. He did higher. He got to number 29. Rachel, everyone's favourite pop star, Nathan Sykes. Did he do better or worse than 29?
The eyebrow one.
He has no comment. Eyebrows. Well, we all have eyebrows.
He has
Rachel,
very distinctive
unless you're
eyebrows.
Whoopi Goldberg.
As we know from last week, another one of them was once called Chlamydia Boy. So I think calling him the one with the eyebrows is fine.
Throwback to last week's podcast.
I'm going to say he did worse.
I'm afraid he did better. He got to number 11. Just missed out. Just goes to show what good PR can do, doesn't it? All right. Little known star, Michael Jackson. Formerly of the Jackson 5, his debut album, Got to Be There. How did it do in the UK singles chart?
Oh, I feel like this is a...
Albums.
I feel like this is
a... Albums chart.
I'll get at you if you don't check that.
Get his red pen out.
Oh, see, I feel like you're going to trick me here, but then I'm going to say the trick answer and it's actually going to be the right answer.
God, the podcast quiz is full of double bluffs.
So I'm just going to go higher.
I'm afraid that's incorrect.
I knew you were going to say that.
Is that what you said a second ago? Got to number 37 in the UK albums chart, which means that we literally live in a world where Nathan Sykes' debut album did better than Michael Jackson's, which I guess he can always tell himself on those cold winter nights. Rachel, back to you. You're in the lead with 1 point.
Yay.
Lee Ryan, did he do better or worse than Michael Jackson with his debut album?
Maybe he did better.
He did better.
Yeah.
He got to number 6. Better than all these
six.
Guys. Number 6 with his self-titled debut album, Lee Ryan. And Rachel, congratulations, because you've officially won this week's chart. It means you know the most about boy bands, which means that you win in the podcast quiz and lose at life. So on that note, we'll be back next week. Laters!